You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. Vocabulary changes from time to time, and we come across new words to understand and to deal with. So if I asked you whether you were neurodiverse or neurotypical, I wonder what you would say. Statistically, you're probably neurotypical because those who are neurodiverse form a much smaller part of the population. For example, those who have autism maybe represent 1 to 2%. Those with ADHD, around 3% perhaps. But it is thought that these statistics underrepresent the situation, with many, especially children and young people, on a waiting list for assessment, and of course many adults perhaps underdiagnosed completely. As Christians who lead, we need to understand what it means to be neurodiverse and to be aware of the range of people in our care. And for Christians who lead churches, we are wise to consider the neurodiverse as we think of the space where we meet and what we do. So I'm delighted to be joined on the show by Mark Arnold. He is the Additional Needs Ministry Director for Urban Saints and the co-founder of the Additional Needs Alliance, a collective of organisations, children and youth workers, parents and more who share a passion for making a positive difference for children and young people with additional needs. He's father to James, who is autistic. So welcome, Mark, to the Leadership Show.
Oh, thanks, Andy. Hello, everyone. Great to be with you today.
Now, your journey to being interested in this whole field, Mark?
Yeah, it's an area I've been passionate about for quite a few years now, and two main drivers for that. I've been involved in Christian children's and youth work for a long time, and along that journey have met and worked alongside lots of children and young people with a range of additional needs of different kinds. And I've always been passionate about helping them to belong, to be fully included, to make sure that all we do is accessible. And then, as you mentioned in the brief introduction, James, our youngest of our two children, came into the world 22 years ago. And when he was two, was diagnosed as autistic and with learning difficulties. And so our journey with James as family, as church, and in the stuff that I do at Urban Saints has been an evolving area that's grown that passion for this work too.
And 2 years age would be quite young to be diagnosed, I'm guessing.
Very much so, yeah. Across the country, it is a bit of a postcode lottery. And we won that lottery in that James was only two when he was diagnosed. So that was great news for us. We managed to get those answers at an early stage. I know lots of families who are still struggling, much, much older children than James was to try and get a diagnosis. And of course, COVID and everything else that's happened in the last few years has not helped with diagnosis waiting times and all of that too. So yeah, it was good for us, but there's a lot of families out there that really struggle to get the answers they're looking for.
Now, Mark, my introduction hinted at the meaning of neurodiverse, neurotypical. I understand you may even want to question how I use the words in my introduction. So talk about what the language really means. And,
I mean, language is a complex area in this. When I first started talking about the whole area of additional needs a few years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, the language was different then to what it is now. And lots has changed. Some people, as we think about people who are not neurotypical, talk about being neurodivergent. And so individuals will describe themselves as neurodivergent. When we look at the whole range of people. We talk about the diversity of those people, and therefore of us collectively being neurodiverse. Often, as you mentioned in your introduction, people who don't aren't autistic or have ADHD or one of the other areas of neurodivergence are referred to as neurotypical, and that's the vast majority of the population. But different people can often come at this in different ways and from different angles and with different preferences. And so the important thing is to ask somebody what their preference is for themselves, and then to go with that. We talk about people who are autistic, whereas some people prefer to be described as a person who has autism or with autism. The vast majority prefer the term to be described as autistic. But again, asking individually what people prefer and using that is always the most important thing to do.
Okay, that's helpful, Mark. Now, James is autistic, and autism is a broad spectrum. So, can I ask how it manifests in James and how that may be different across the range of autism?
Yeah, so James is autistic. As I mentioned just now, when he was two, he was diagnosed as autistic, but also with learning difficulties. And those learning difficulties include him having very little, almost no functioning verbal communication. He has a handful of words that he can use. He communicates in other ways. So he needs lots of care during the day, lots of all this sort of personal care done for him. He's 22, yeah, he doesn't have a day like a typical 22-year-old. His day is very different because of the various needs that he has. When he was 15, epilepsy and anxiety arrived on his list of diagnoses as well. And there are other things that are undiagnosed, but that we know James is journeying with. So there's a mixture of different things that James has as part of his diagnosis makeup. And that can be true for lots of neurodivergent people. So some people may be autistic and very intelligent, very independent, but can struggle socially or might still have certain care needs that that they need to be aware of. There's a wide range of approaches. Often autism is referred to as a spectrum, and that spectrum is wide and varied and different for every person. It's always good to try and think about what else is going on for an individual, as well as them being autistic. Are there other things that are different diagnoses or conditions or whatever that they're journeying with as well that make up who they are?
Now, that's helpful, Mark. And back to language a little bit, because even the ways in which some of these words are described, I mean, autistic spectrum disorder, the disorder word is obviously a negative word, suggests something's wrong.
Yes.
And yet, though some with who are autistic say, well, I'm just different. I'm not quite, don't
Yeah.
call me wrong. ADHD, the D at the end is a disorder again. Others prefer acronyms that don't use the word disorder but use the word trait. And I the reason I'm saying this is that from a Christian leadership point of view, you could score a few own goals even at the start of
Absolutely.
your conversation if you're not sensitive to this.
Absolutely, yeah. Words have power. Language is important, and you're right. The medical definition of autism spectrum disorder. Sometimes we hear autism spectrum condition, but a disorder or a condition typically is something that medically you try and fix, isn't it? You try and cure somebody and make them better from it. So it has all sorts of difficult connotations, negative connotations, but autistic people who actually don't see themselves as having a disorder or a condition, but that they're just differently wired. They experience the world in different ways, communicate in different ways, understand things in different ways, but don't see it as a disorder. And from a church point of view, that's really important for us to know, because if somebody has something that's described as a disorder or a condition that can lead us down a path towards, well, then let's pray for healing. Let's just go down that path, and that can often be difficult and sometimes unwelcome as well. So the medical model can be really unhelpful for us here. But there's something called the social model, and what the social model says is that actually it's the world at large, society as a whole, that puts barriers in the way of, for example, autistic people, that makes life harder for them, and doesn't understand and adapt to the needs of neurodivergent people. And so that puts more of an emphasis on all of us as society to recognize that and think about ways that we can make the world a better place for everybody, and a place where everybody can thrive. And then we're then taking that disorder, that condition, even the reference to autism as a disability, and framing that differently, because we're seeing that actually the disabling element here is all of us, in the way that we create an unequal world. And if we created a fairer world, a more equitable world where everybody was able to belong equally, then it would be a much better place for us all.
Mark, this segues very neatly into your work with Urban Saints and also with the Additional Needs Alliance. So talk a little bit about what you get up to in a typical month or whatever.
Oh gosh. So yeah, lots of different things, but collectively all about resourcing, equipping, training, and helping mainly the church, with a collection of denominations involved in that, to make a difference for children, young people, and young adults that they're journeying with, who have additional needs, differences, diversities of different kinds. So, running lots of training, traveling around the country doing that, speaking at conferences, writing, recording podcasts like the one with yourself, lots of content creation that just gets that message out there. Just now we were talking about how important it is to create a fair and more equitable world, and that's what I'm trying to do through a lot of the work I'm involved in, through Urban Saints, and also with my co-founder and partner in crime, Kay Morganger, in the Additional Needs Alliance as well. And each church that gets trained, each conference organization that we speak to, there's folk that are going back to their churches that are able to better include the children, young people, and young adults they're journeying with, and make what they do more accessible and inclusive, and a place where everyone belongs.
And a wonderful way of welcoming those outside the local church who perhaps feel a bit at loss. And the church ought to be a place where they can feel warm and welcomed and loved and supported.
Absolutely. We know that 95% of families that have a child or young person with additional needs of some kind are in our community all around us, but don't connect yet with their church. And we also know that they're struggling. COVID, the cost of living crisis, so much that's happened in the last few years has disproportionately affected those families. At Urban Saints, we're part of something called the Disabled Children's Partnership, and we've been surveying families for several years and finding out their experiences of how life is for them. And it's tough and it's hard. A lot of the secular support has disappeared or been drastically cut back. We all know that local government's under huge financial pressure. So there's loads that's problematic out there. And the church, is well placed in every community to step up and make a difference and transform the experience of those families and the way in which they're supported.
Church leaders who are listening, of course, can invite you along to their church to give a full presentation. Just a few pointers, really, I guess, with respect to how, say you and James might approach approach a new church, and what the kind of things that would be challenging for him as they approach a place that you know we may not think of if we're quotes neurotypical.
Yeah, so if we're thinking about an autistic young man like James, then generally I think we can think about the barriers in three categories, and those categories are the place itself, the program that happens there, and the people that are involved. So, you know, in typical preacher style, we've got three P's. And the first of them, the place. So that's where you have those physical barriers that might be about getting into the place. You know, is it open? Are the doors open? Is it easy for somebody to walk in? Or do they have to actually open a door themselves? That can be a barrier in of itself for somebody who's anxious and finding it hard. And a new place can be daunting. But then, is it loud? Are there ear defenders or ear pods provided that can help with that? Is there a welcome there, but not an overpowering welcome, a gentle welcome that helps people to feel reassured and that they are noticed and cared for? Are the resources available to them if they need, for example, the order of service with symbols on it to help them understand the different parts of the program? Is there a visual timetable available that can show them what's happening? And that leads us into our second P of program. So thinking about making sure we don't have unexpected changes to our program, or suddenly asking somebody to come out the front and talk or do something without warning them first. Being clear about the instructions that we give. There was a lovely story of an autistic boy who was heading out to the children's session at his church and noticed a new sign had been put up by the bank of lights at the back of the worship area. And he duly obeyed what the sign said, because the sign said, when leaving this room, please turn off all the lights. Well, he was leaving the room, so he turned off all the lights and plunged the rest of his congregation into darkness. You know, so thinking about being more precise with our language, if you're the last person leaving the room, please turn off all the lights. Use of metaphors. You know, there's lots of Christianese, isn't there? But think about somebody who might be a literal thinker, who hears somebody talking about being washed in the blood of the Lamb, to use a phrase that we don't hear so much now, but we still do hear. Or somebody saying, oh, the preacher's on fire today. You know, yeah. Those could be quite concerning things for somebody to hear. And then, you know, those people barriers can be things like, you know, every church has a hugger, don't they? And the hugger is often on the welcome team. And so when somebody arrives who may not welcome that physical contact, you know, they've got to get past the hugger. There's people that might insist on eye contact, or somebody sitting still and being quiet whilst they listen to the talk, and all kinds of things that a neurodiverse person may find quite hard to comply with. So, there are lots of barriers there. The most important thing that church leaders can do is to ask the audience, you know, ask the individuals themselves, their families, if they're children, what barriers do they experience? What are the things they find hard? And then together, because inclusion must always be done with and not unto, but together to explore how to take those barriers down, and in doing so, make church a better place for us all.
Oh, that's really helpful, Mark. Thanks for that summary. What particular aspects of the neurodiverse thinking might we need to be aware of when it comes to finding faith and growing faith?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, this is very much each person individually and asking them, you know, what their thinking is in this and what their understanding is. But, you know, there are certain parts of our faith that can be hard to nail down. You know, faith itself, belief in God, somebody that we can't necessarily see, but we feel and experience. Those can be hard concepts to understand. The Holy Spirit can be a hard concept to understand. So thinking about, alongside children, young people, adults, who might be neurodivergent, exploring with them how they understand other things that are hard to nail down and understand. You know, what how do they experience things like you know, the wind? You know, you can't see the wind, you can feel it, you can see the effect of it. You know, is there a parallel there with perhaps how we could start to think about the Holy Spirit? So just, yeah, working through things like that together can help us to help somebody who, yeah, again, is a literal thinker who struggles with metaphors. You know, Jesus used metaphors all the time in the Gospels, didn't he? He's constantly telling parables and using metaphors. And so sometimes we need to unpick those a bit and frame them in a way that works better for an individual so that they're able to grasp what was being said there and what the true meaning of it was.
And the kind of pastoral care that a parent of a neurodivergent child might need. I mean, how would you,
Again,
what have you needed?
yeah, you know, that's, you know, that's a big question, and it's going to be different for every family, of course. But you know, in our case, what's been helpful to us over the years is having folk that have been there to support James when he's been at church. So we've been able to then serve and be a part of church in other ways, knowing that James is being well supported by one of his team of one-to-one helpers. Some of those have also over the years come and supported James at home, which has enabled us to continue working and continue to do the things that we need to do to keep our little family boat afloat. So that care and support has been really appreciated. And of course, prayer is absolutely at the heart of all of this, praying for families and lifting them up into God's presence and just asking for, yeah, the right things for them. But as with many of these areas and many of my answers, it's always about asking the audience. It's asking them what will be helpful for them. And that will be different for every family. You know, for some it might be doing some practical things like, oh, you know, just getting some shopping in for them because they're really stretched trying to sort out things for their child. It might be yeah, just coming and helping out with a few jobs around the house. It could be being yeah, just a listening ear when times are tough, because like raising any child, there are times that can be really hard for families with a child with additional needs, differences, diversity of any kind. And when those difficult times come, it's good to be to know that there's somebody that you can just talk to. You know, that those families feel valued. They're not forgotten. They're missed for all the right reasons if they're not at church. You know, somebody will phone up and say, "Hey, didn't see you at church this week. Are you okay? How are things?" And really mean that. So yeah, you know, there's lots that we can do, and all of those things and more, you know, can be really starting to make a difference, not just for the 5% of families that we see in our churches on a regular basis, but reaching out to that 95% that are in our communities all around us that desperately need us, but haven't yet found us.
Mark, you've been doing this kind of work for quite a while. Are you sensing that the message is getting through?
Yes, I've definitely seen a change over the time that I've been working in this area. There's still a long way to go. I think the church in the UK splits out into three groups. There's a growing group of churches that do this really well, that, yeah, you know, got some good things in place, and they're attracting more families because success breeds success, and you know, families talk to other families that they know. There's a big group of churches in the middle who want to do that. They want to have that success story for themselves, but don't know where to start. You know, worried about getting it wrong, saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. You know, we were talking about language earlier. Struggle to know, you know, what their next step might be. And I spend a lot of my time with those churches because they're the churches I can help to go on that journey and take those first steps and to start to make a difference. Sadly, there are still some churches, it's a shrinking group, but still a significant one, who just don't see this as something for them at all. And that's sad. But yeah, you can't get everyone. And so yeah, I focus on that middle group and try and make a difference there.
Well, finally, Mark, how would people get in touch with you if they felt the need to either get some consultation or invite you along?
Okay, so they can contact me via my Urban Saints email address, which is marnold@urbansaints.org. They can find me on my blog page, which is the additional needs blogfather.com. Or they could join the Additional Needs Alliance Facebook group. If you search in Facebook for Additional Needs Alliance, you'll find us there. And then we'll look out for you there as well. So whether it's email, website, or social media, you'll find us one way or another.
Well, thank you, Mark, so much for all that you've shared and for the insights you've given. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Great to chat.
It was good to chat with Mark Arnold, the Additional Needs Ministry Director for Urban Saints, about how we support those who are neurodivergent, either in our congregations or amongst those we lead. And the key message seems to be to ask and involve, to ask what's appropriate and how we can best support and involve folk who are neurodivergent in the kind of decisions we make regarding the way we structure meetings, the way we create our space to be inclusive. So if you want to get in touch with Mark and invite him to your church or place of work, marnold@urbansaints.org is his email. And he mentioned also you can join the Facebook group, the Additional Needs Alliance. And if you type that into Facebook, you'll be able to join and find out more and the resources that they have on offer. So this is Andy Peck. Thank you for your company. Looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.